and welcome to PodRocket, a web development podcast brought to you by LogRocket. LogRocket helps software teams improve user experience with session replay, error tracking, and product analytics. You can try it free at logrocket.com. I'm Noel, and today we're welcoming back Alexandra Sikora, developer experience lead at EdgeDB. She's here to talk about TypeScript-powered backend essentials for front-end developers. Welcome back, Alexandra. How's it going?
Yeah, hello. I'm super happy to be back on this podcast. Happy to chat for the next, half an hour or so.
Yeah, 30 minutes. We'll see how carried away we get, and we'll...
that's a broad topic that we have today.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm excited for this one. It's a question... provoking topic. Can you explain what it means? Why do front-end developers care about TypeScript-powered backends?
So I started thinking about it from this perspective that like Next.js, Remix, and other frameworks, we go toward this full-stack development. So currently, you can use one framework to do backend and front-end work. And that's cool. That's nice because that lets you ship your product. There's like less context switching. You operate in the same repo, in the same language. There are a bunch of benefits. And when I was thinking about TypeScript-powered backend, I was thinking about what if your app grows? Like, what if Next.js or Remix, of course, is not enough anymore? Like, are there other tools that you can use to scale our application to help with performance bottlenecks and so on, while still having this type safety? And still like leveraging TypeScript wherever possible.
Can you give me an example how a full stack framework might grow to a point where we need to be consciously thinking about this a little bit more?
When you have a platform and a bunch of people sign up to your platform, you have like many users and your sign up flow is that you add a user to a database, then you also send a welcome email, then you do something else, maybe you add them to a newsletter. Maybe you perform another action, and all of those steps take time. In order to respond with a successful user creation, like to finish the sign-up process, it may take maybe even a few seconds. So that's one problem. And then if you have many users signing up at the same time, you may face some performance bottlenecks server-side. So maybe we could delegate some jobs to the background. Maybe you can use background jobs, maybe cron jobs. So this is like one of the things that, you know, we could do, and we could use tools that are type safe to do so.
Do you feel like there's a lot of developers in this position where they have a full stack app they've built with a framework and they're trying to figure out how to branch out beyond it? Anecdotally, I don't know if I've run into a ton of devs that are in that spot, because I feel like everybody's got an opinion if they're already trying to use some tool. Like when you're talking to people, is this like kind of greenfield for them typically, or are they using some other thing, whatever they have been familiar with using in the past?
I think that just sticking to a framework can get you really far.
Yeah.
Like really far. So it's a matter of improving the performance, because, you know, you can wait for all those steps to perform. You know, it may not be a huge deal, but if you want to provide users with faster performance, then you may want to think about delegating it. And I think when we are talking about startups, for example, they do aim to grow. And yeah, that might be even a good thing to do even before you run into like serious issues.
That makes sense to me. It seems intuitive to a lot of people listening as well. So I guess, let's say somebody's started down this journey. They've got maybe a full stack app they've built, and they have a little bit of kind of external functionality handling some of these slower asynchronous processes. Or they don't have any yet at all. Why are you encouraging them to use TypeScript over something else?
So it's not about encouraging to use TypeScript. It's more, I'm thinking about if they have, for example, like let's stick to the Next.js example.
Sure.
So they have some backend logic in the API routes, or maybe they use React Server components and have everything there. And now we could have a separate server handling things that is in, I don't know, Python, Rust, whatever. But maybe we can use, I'm very familiar with Ingest, maybe not very familiar, but this is something, this is like my go-to for those kind of things. And it's serverless. I don't have to do many things myself, like handling the background jobs. They do it for me. But like the benefit I see here is that they give me like this type-safe client that I can use. And I don't have to go outside of this TypeScript scope.
Gotcha. So is that kind of the typical use case that you see here you're trying to explain to people is like the beauty of having this type safe scope everywhere, or are there other benefits beyond not needing to context switch?
How I try to frame it is that this is like the simplest way. You may have better performance and you may have like better results to like having your server in Rust or like switching to microservices, like in some cases maybe. Like we can't deny that Next.js and like other Nuxt or like Remix, they do grow in popularity. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice that you can like ship fast and you can do really a lot with them really fast. So when I'm talking about it, I usually think about those people who use Next.js or similar frameworks already.
When people are asking about this, are they looking for ways to just improve performance, or what's the typical motivation they have? Or like, are you encouraging a more proactive approach for people who aren't really even thinking about this yet?
Performance is one thing. The other thing is reliance. Mm. So going back to this example with the sign up flow, sending emails, adding to a newsletter, imagine you are on the first step. You already added like this new user to the database. You might have sent a welcome email, and then the newsletter step fails. So what now? You'd have to handle the retries yourself in your code. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, you throw an error and the user that tried to sign up, they see, oh, the sign up wasn't successful. So what they do, they try to sign up again. And what happens? They have an information that this email is already registered. And maybe they're going to get the welcome email. So that's not good. And doing it ourselves, handling the retries, especially when we are dealing with third-party services, can be tiresome. So what I'm also encouraging is to use some tools that help with that, so that we don't have to worry and they handle the retry for us.
I would assume that a lot of devs, when they're thinking about firing off an email when something happens, they're already like reaching for some kind of API to help them with that process. So it is like a non-blocking function call that they're effectively making, like whatever. A user signs up, I'm just going to use my NPM module to call whatever my email sending service is, and I'm not going to like await that. I'll fire off and call it. Mm-hmm. Are there specific workflows that you find that devs are having to implement themselves in a blocking manner where there's not already kind of a clean service level that makes this asynchronous, non-blocking behavior happen implicitly?
So that example of an email, then like my question is, what happens if there's like a failure on the third party email service? It depends what you are using. Maybe that service can handle it itself, or maybe, you know, we'll get notified that certain users didn't get emails, but that still then we'll have to do things.
Yeah. So is there a specific kind of wrapping layer that'll handle like retry and backoff logic without, you know, like in this non-blocking manner that we're talking about that you wanted to speak to, or is this more like a general kind of pattern?
Yeah. So when I was talking about this topic at the conference last week, I was mentioning Ingest, like the serverless platform with background jobs and so on. And so that's one way, because they abstract those things away, so that we may still call the third-party email service under the hood. Mm-hmm. But if something fails, though, there, then Ingest will retry it automatically. Another thing to mention, maybe there are different paths. So the sign-up wall is more or less like one thing after another. But another example can be like a checkout. So someone is trying to purchase a product, and then our backend logic is, okay, so let's see if the payment is successful. And now if the payment is successful, we want to send an email with some information about the product. And if it's not, then we want to probably send a payment link. And then we want to wait a certain amount of time. Maybe you want to send a reminder every day for the next 3 days. So I think that Ingest also helps with that, because then again, we can do this manually, like handling all of these cases, but it's nice if we don't have to.
Are there other kind of tools in this space that you considered or have encouraged devs to kind of reach for, these workflow resumability pipelining tools?
So something I haven't used yet, but I've seen a tweet the other day, was that flight control recently added background jobs. So I'm yet to use it, and I'm yet to see how it works exactly. But it may be another thing to consider.
I think it is like a handy tool to keep in one's back pocket. It's like, okay, we need some help us with these complex multi-stage processes and make it easier. Is there a reason in particular you think like these tools are helping solve a problem like for front-end developers? Or are you mainly speaking to front-end developers here because like you think this is a problem that front-end developers just don't have to think about typically, and this is typically the domain of back-end
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to help bridge that?
Yeah, I'm more like trying to bridge that gap because I feel like there's a bunch of front-end developers who are becoming full-stack developers.
Gotcha.
So I'm trying to bridge this gap by talking about, like as you said, things that were like typically more of a back-end area.
We've been talking about this sign-up login flow maybe as an example and checkout.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other processes? I'm trying to think of things that like back-end devs usually have to deal with. Maybe like async processes that aren't even necessarily kicked off by a user action, but like, okay, whatever, on the second Tuesday of the month, or we have some like promotion going on in our store, we want to like email all the users, like this kind of flow that's not user-driven. Are there any tools that can help there?
Yes, so we have cron jobs. So this is like another thing. It's more like a backend concept and not something that frontend developers have to think about. So with cron jobs, we can have recurring events. So like the promotion emails, this is one example. Like we want to send an email with, I don't know, like a marketing email or maybe a reminder, or maybe the thing that I mentioned to remind a user about payment. This is another example where a cron job can help. But so this is one part of that, but maybe also something that is more related to development. We want to clean up a database every month because maybe we have an application that stores a bunch of data and we don't really need it. So when it's older than a month, those repetitive tasks can also help here.
Is there distinct tooling you'd recommend here or anything you'd encourage people to check out, or is this the same kind of prescription?
So there are two things that I've used in the past. There's like I've been using Supabase a bit, and in Supabase there's this extension pgcron. So that's one thing that you can use to declare logic that is supposed to happen multiple times. You can use ingest, but like it depends. Like if you're already using ingest, then go ahead and just use the cron jobs from this tool because the setup is very similar to regular background jobs. Otherwise, leveraging this pgcron extension is a good.
Is there anything in particular about pgcron that makes it easier for kind of more JavaScript, TypeScript front-end devs? Or is it agnostic in that regard?
I think it's agnostic in that regard. And then again, Supabase is another tool that is like widely used. And this is a similar case. If you're already using it as your database, then why not?
Are there any other features, maybe in regards to like scalability and like app popularity that front-end devs might need some assistance with if they're relying on their full stack framework to do things that may become problematic over time that you've kind of seen people struggle with in the past?
So when it comes to popularity, like there are things like real time that we can talk about. And when it comes to like your app growing, then there's this whole thing of crashing on different levels. There's like load balancing and so on.
Which do you think is an easier one to tackle first?
So I think the real time stuff might be the easiest one to tackle.
Sure. When we're talking about real time, what maybe is a good example of this kind of feature set as well, or something that might not work if you try to build it just with like the tools that the full stack framework provides, where you might need to reach for something else?
So for real time, like not every app might need real time, but like one example is like an admin panel. You have some stats in this application and on the server side, on the database side, they change frequently. You may want to update them live in your front-end application. So you may need real time for that. Like a classic example is a chat.
Yeah.
You do need to see the reply right away.
Yeah.
All the like collaborative things like editors, drawing apps.
Let's use chat
mm-hmm.
just as an example, because I feel like it's kind of easier to have concrete within it. I feel like this is one of those problems. If one is just a front-end dev and they know their framework, this seems like it maybe be daunting almost. Like, where do I even begin? What would you encourage these devs that are more front-end focused to look at to ensure they kind of don't misstep or they end up picking the right tool for the job?
Yeah. So when we are talking about the chat, then we do need it immediately. So WebSockets can be a way to go. Before I talk about WebSockets, the easiest way to have some kind of like real-time experience, just keep sending, resending the request to the server. Like, hey, they are spawning exactly. So like every few seconds, give me the latest info. But that can be good in some cases when the data on your server doesn't change that frequently and right. you do not need right away in 1 second live update. But with things like a chat, we may want to use WebSocket. We may want to establish this connection between server and client so that we have the messages from the server right away.
Is there any kind of particular tooling that would be easier that like leverages something like WebSockets if you're a front-end focused developer to make it easier to get into that domain?
So there are a few things that I've used in the past. I already mentioned Supabase. Mm-hmm. So let's stick to that. They have this real-time part of it. So, you know, if you're using Supabase, that will be the easiest way. The API is really nice. And then another popular thing is TRPC library. So they do have subscriptions. When you are like declaring your server router with all the procedures, you can also declare like procedures that are meant to be subscribed to. So again, like with this library, like with the TRPC client, you can have like this WebSocket connection and this real-time updates relatively easy. And then I wanted to mention something. Okay, so maybe you are using GraphQL, which is also something that is popular. Then you can use GraphQL subscriptions. So that's something that, you know, it depends on what GraphQL client you are using, but this client will handle it for you.
I think the beauty of those tools in that layer is that it ends up being easier than to update the front end. Like, you don't have to rethink how data is flowing into the application. You can use the same logical abstractions. It's like, okay, when this data updates, now we just have to be reactive. And instead of this being a reactive thing that's, you know, reactive to some state that we're controlling, it's reactive to the thing that's being updated by whatever, our GraphQL subscription, which can be pretty handy. And I think one could achieve the same thing with like Supabase listeners or Firebase. Like, they have their same kind of like, you can just subscribe to events getting updated in the store, and then it magically bubbles to the client. It's super nice. Mm-hmm. Are there any other kind of in this space getting real-time or near real-time feeling experiences, or do you think that is enough for most use cases?
I think that is enough. So another thing that I'm mentioning sometimes is a pop-up pattern, just to know that this kind of design pattern exists. So when we're talking about WebSockets and polling, we're talking about how the data flows, how the client like reaches for the data, and PubSub, like publisher subscriber, is a design pattern. Basically states that there is a publisher service that publishes some messages in like different topics, and anyone can subscribe to it. So there can be multiple clients. It doesn't say exactly how it, like what was the implementation detail. You can use WebSocket for the connection. Mm-hmm. It's more of a pattern to know. I think it's good to know that it exists and how it's called in case you need it in the future.
I think it's an interesting one to bring up because I feel like there's Cloud PubSub and Kafka and whatever, like whatever AWS offers, all these things. But they kind of feel like all of their messaging and the way they approach this, it's very kind of service oriented. But then these tools that have positioned themselves to be more this, yeah, we're like an easy drop-in for front-end developers so they can build something like their chat app or pick your example. Mm-hmm. When do you think this kind of discussion around, hey, maybe you actually need a little bit more architecture here, like you need to be thinking about one-to-many and broadcasting and all this stuff, like as a developer just trying to build your app, when do you think about that versus like, okay, I need to actively go consider this design pattern versus like, hey, I'll just look at the docs for the tool I'm using and I can probably work my way into like any abstraction that I would need?
So I agree, this is more on the service level. Like most of the examples that I just got in my head are when we are dealing with probably other backend services that want to subscribe to yet another service because they want to update something in the database.
Yeah.
But maybe we also have like multiple clients that are not really connected to each other. This is useful from the publisher side. You don't really care who receives your message. How I like to think about it is that the publisher is more like agnostic. It just, you know, sends them data, but it doesn't really matter what happens with this information.
Are there any kind of signals or signs that a dev might look out for to indicate to them, like, maybe this isn't just a simple write to a database, have clients read to it, but I might need some specific architecture?
So I think this is yet another level of growing your app and scaling your app.
Oh, gotcha.
So if you reach that level, you probably at this point have a separate server. And I think we are like going outside of the one Next.js project.
That makes sense. That's probably as good a segue as any. Kind of in this, like back to scalability as an app gains popularity and stuff for scaling, maybe in particular things that front-end devs might not think about if they're relying on like a full stack kind of front-end framework.
So one thing that I like to mention, and I think we should mention it already, is rate limiting.
Mm.
So basically when our app grows in popularity, we may have some like attacks or maybe someone created a bot or to scrape the data that sends like many requests to the app or any kind of script. And if we are being attacked, then it means that our hosting platform bill goes up and no one wants that.
Mm-hmm.
Like we sometimes sit with people posting their AWS bills and they do not feel good. So with rate limiting, we can say that we only allow a particular number of requests from a given IP address and we are safe. We don't have to worry about those kind of things.
Is there anything IP-based rate limiting that can be handy to help with this, like denial of service or like malicious actor problems?
I'm not sure. Do you have something in mind?
I'm curious. I feel like you can pull stuff off the shelf or try to implement it yourself, but I'd imagine that this is like pretty far from, I don't want to say that like front-end devs want to have to be dealing with this, but this feels like it's like on the opposite end of that spectrum of the kinds of problems that front-end devs are usually considering. So is this kind of just like use your tools that are already available to you or like?
Okay, so one thing is you may want to consider is AppStash. They have this rate limit thing. And again, if you are using like Next.js, then you can have the middleware that intercepts the requests and like AppStash rate limiting handles.
Nice. Cool. So I guess beyond that kind of rate limiting, is there anything else worth considering from a scalability perspective here? Stuff that might bite front-end developers if they're not careful?
Yes, we may want to consider caching, the most interesting subject of all.
Yeah.
So there are different levels of caching. And if you're using a framework, like it probably handles a lot for you, like the assets and your browser's caches, like also a bunch of things. But something that is more on the backend side that we may want to consider is using a separate like key value store to cache some results. Let's say there's a particular set of data that user requests from the database, and reaching the database is more expensive. So we may want to have this middle layer, like a Redis key value store, another one where we have basically a copy of the data. So every time user requests it, then we check the key value store because it's like faster to reach it. It's like less expensive. And if it's there, perfect. We could just return it to the user. Otherwise, we call the database where the data is, and then we update the cache, like the key value store, the information from the database to the user.
If you're coming at this as a developer that's traditionally been more front-end focused, what data would be the most useful to cache? Like, where do you spend your energy?
So I think it depends on the application, but let's say this is an admin panel that displays some like stats.
Sure.
Then we may want to cache like something that is on the main page, like the default data that user wants to see. And because also like when you're talking about an admin panel and the displays kind of charts, there's probably also like a bunch of computations that are going on. So this is one example. If the app is huge and if we have, you know, large user base. Another example I thought of is like when you have a social media app like Twitter, right?
Mm, sure.
So you may want to cache the latest tweets or whatever it is. Like there's some tweets that are in this For You tab so that user can see them instantly.
Along these same lines, as an app scales up, maybe you have multiple connections to a database or there's like some other kind of horizontal scaling happening. Is there anything that may help manage multiple database connections and how that might all come into play?
Yeah, so there's something like database pooling. So basically, whatever database you're using, it probably has a limit of connections. And when you have multiple clients, then for every time you reach the database and you want to establish a new connection, there's a bunch of things that are going on, like security stuff, like the encryption to establish the connection. So database pooling works this way, that you have this pooler that kind of manages the connections and reuses them. So there's something like PG Bouncer, for example. Something that I have used is this library called PG. And when you are using, for example, Drizzle as an ORM, then you can create the pool with PG and then pass it to Drizzle. So that's one way to achieve the database pooling. And also, for example, like the company that I work for right now, HDB, they have it built in. So you don't have to do anything extra.
Do you find, just in like devs you've talked to, most of them are using a database abstraction that needs a pooling library in the middle? Or have most people already reached for something that's handling the pooling step?
I actually think that a lot of people use Prisma or Drizzle. There aren't that many people currently using Next.js, like using modern frameworks and, just sending SQL to the server. And I think that's something like database pooling. It's not widely known.
Yeah.
I know, I have this impression. So that's something to consider, especially that like the setup, Drizzle, Prisma, it doesn't require that much. You may see some improvements.
One of the reasons to look at tools off the shelf sometimes instead of always trying to build. Along these same lines, is there anything like trends-wise or with technology that you are seeing that might be prudent for devs to keep an eye on or like watch for?
So the tools that we already mentioned, like Ingest for all the background jobs, cron jobs, webhooks, and so on, Supabase, the data store, and real-time flight control, like especially with the latest things, background jobs that they mentioned. I would also encourage people to look into HDB because it handles a lot of database stuff for you with way easier setup. And then again, for like rate limiting, and also for key value store, maybe that you want to use for caching, I would look into Upstash. And another thing, I think also Versal is doing a lot of cool things. There's Versal, key value store, and other things as well.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of players trying to get into this, like to the edge, and there's these hybrid key value caching database things, and there's like a bunch of people, because I think it is a common problem.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's like a very simple abstraction that is very useful. Like it's applicable to many cases. There's like frameworks and like their associated hosting providers. And then there's like offs like Appstash. And then all the way at the other end, like even like Cloudflare, like the CDNs are like, oh, we can do this for you. Like they're trying to get in on this.
Yeah.
Because there is so much more utility there. Cool. I feel like we've like covered a lot in our 30 minutes. Is there anything else you want to touch on, Alexander?
If you are talking about those backend concepts, there are like plenty of things that we can talk about.
Yeah.
But I think that we can end here.
We could talk all day. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, yeah. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure.